Welcome back to the program. I'm Michael Cohen with producer James Platy. As the U.S. Supreme Court this week hears oral arguments on the Affordable Care Act, you can only wonder what's ahead if and when the law goes into full effect and the healthcare exchanges are up and running. What kinds of choices will consumers be making? Well, a new University of Michigan study provides some insight, and its co-author, Richard Hirth, professor at the U of M School of Public Health, joins me now to tell us more about it. Richard, thank you very much for joining us this evening.
Glad to be here.
You know, it seems that in many cases we choose our health insurance plan and we stick with it, although your findings were that there is a lot more moving around from one insurer to another than some might think. What exactly did you find?
Well, we looked at switching by University of Michigan retirees, and the reason we looked at that population is that they had sort of an interesting change in university policy that imposed small increases in price for the most commonly enrolled plan, which is the Blue Cross Major Medical Plan, which had about a 70% market share in 2002. Small price increases were imposed in 2004 and then much larger price increases in 2005. And what made it an interesting study is that the university looked back retrospectively and decided that those who retired prior to 1987 were exempt from these price changes. So it kind of gives us sort of a natural control group where we've got one group of retirees, those who retired shortly after the cutoff date that faced these price increases, and then another group that didn't.
Those that were protected from the price increases, did they shift anything or did they typically stay in the plan as is?
Basically, they stayed in the plans that they were already in. The market share changed, you know, maybe a percentage point or two, which is probably within sort of random noise.
I see. And the other group, then, at what point, what kind of price differential triggered them to make a switch?
Well, the first price change in 2004 made the Blue Cross Major Medical Plan more expensive than it was previously, where there was no out-of-pocket cost for that plan. But it still didn't make it more expensive than the alternative choices, and that really wasn't enough to elicit much of a change. But in 2005, the Blue Cross Major Medical Plan became considerably more expensive than most of the other plans that were offered, and that cost that plan about 30% of its enrollment in the post-1987 retirees who were subject to the price change.
Did they have choices that were cheaper before that they weren't going to?
No, Blue Cross Major Medical was actually the cheapest choice for them based on the university's policy at the time to fully cover the plan that had the highest enrollment.
I see. And the migration then was to the new cheapest plan?
It was mostly to the plan that was, in a sense, most similar to the Blue Cross Major Medical Plan. It was a more restrictive plan, a preferred provider organization, rather than a plan that imposed no restrictions or incentives to use certain networks of providers. But they did not move into the more strictly managed plans like the HMOs.
I'm guessing insurers are aware of that potential. Do you think that they maybe have underestimated how quickly and how many people will leave their plans if they do increase costs?
Well, what's interesting here is that we're looking at a retiree population. And obviously, retirees on average will have more medical care use and therefore more established relationships with doctors and hospitals. And probably that's going to make them somewhat less likely to change plans because they don't want to disrupt those established relationships. And even so, we found a fairly big move. If you look at studies that have looked at the working age population, generally they found even larger responses to changes in price than what we found in the retiree population.
I'm talking to Richard Hirth, professor at the University of Michigan School of Public Health. So, Richard, I guess it's safe to say that when it comes to the healthcare exchanges, we'll see the cheapest plans probably getting the most people signing up for them.
Well, certainly price is going to be a pretty significant factor since the exchanges are aimed mostly at the working age population where we see even stronger responses to price than what we saw. I would expect that that will provide a pretty substantial incentive for insurers to offer aggressive prices in order to not risk their market share. On the other hand, in an employment group, you've got the benefits office as a negotiator on your behalf, and that's not really present in the exchanges. So there's still, to some extent, concern about how much competition there will be within the exchange context.
When you look at what was available to these U of M retirees, there were six different plans. In terms of the types of coverage that was available, was it dramatically different between the six?
Really, they were quite different. They spanned a couple HMOs, so the most restrictive in terms of having a limited network of providers and requirements to go through your primary care provider to really access specialty care or the system more generally, to less restrictive preferred provider organizations that do provide coverage outside the primary network but at higher co-pays.
I wonder, what is your view on what the healthcare exchanges are going to look like and how people are going to navigate them? Aren't we likely going to see maybe even hundreds of choices, and couldn't that lead to kind of a mass confusion sometimes?
Right, it certainly can. Like you said, we had about a half a dozen choices in our study. We've looked at, even within the University of Michigan, for our active employees, we saw that some of the way the information was presented in the benefits booklet made it difficult to compare plans. So one of the things that the exchanges will really have to be cognizant of is providing information in a way that people can really try to compare apples to apples and oranges to oranges. When we have different types of plans being offered, it can be a dizzying array of features and copays and requirements and restrictions on different types of services, and weighing it all could be quite different. There's some well-known studies of choice that have looked actually at jams offered in supermarkets and said, well, how many samples can you have out there? And if you have three or four or five or six samples open, people are much more likely to pick one and buy it than if you have 15 or 20 samples open. They kind of get overwhelmed, and all of a sudden they say, I don't know which one I like, and they end up not making a decision. So that kind of is a loose analogy, but certainly the point you made about being overwhelmed by choice is entirely possible.
Now, you said that Blue Cross Blue Shield had a 70% of the market of these retirees. Mm-hmm. What did it fall to then once their prices went up?
It fell to about 48%.
Okay, that's quite a crash. Now, do you think, and I know Blue Cross has, I think it's over 60% of the market in Michigan. Mm-hmm. Do you expect that that will come down dramatically maybe once these exchanges are in place?
I wouldn't expect it to be dramatic at first, because Blue Cross certainly has a strong reputation with consumers in the state. In addition to that, they have kind of some of the strongest bargaining power with respect to providers. They can certainly negotiate significant discounts from hospitals, which then they would be able to pass on to some extent to consumers in the exchanges in order to encourage enrollment. So I think their 60% market share also gives them a lot of buying power with providers, and that can give them a price advantage that will help them sustain their market share.
Putting the individual mandate issue aside, do you see any drawbacks at all to consumers of having these healthcare exchanges in place?
If they're designed in a way that provides information in a readily comparable fashion so that people can navigate them effectively and be fairly confident they're understanding what they're getting, and if there are not restrictions that really make certain types of plans not allowed, so very high benefits levels being required and maybe not allowing certain plans that are less expensive but offer less benefits, I don't see a lot of downside to consumers, because the current situation, people either buying individually or small firms buying, in other words, the two groups that would go into the exchanges, they face much higher prices for insurance than those who are covered through larger employers, and largely because of the issue of having to rate for risk. In the individual market, insurers are very worried about, well, who's going to be applying? Is it going to be the person who's going to be the high user? So there's a lot of extra expense to underwriting those plans.
Richard Hirth, professor at the University of Michigan School of Public Health. Richard, thank you very much for joining us this evening.
Thanks a lot, Michael.
And we're coming right back. I'm Michael Cohen, and this is 1320 WILS.